he said, that old friends get together. He forced us to move, Hella and he together, Giovanni and I ahead. The bell rang viciously as Giovanni opened the door. The evening air hit us like a blaze. We started walking away from the river toward the boulevard. When I decide to leave a place, said Giovanni, I tell the concierge so that at least she will know where to forward my mail. I flared briefly, unhappily. I had noticed that he was shaven and wore a clean white shirt and tie, a tie which surely belonged to Jacques. I don't see what you've got to complain about, I said. You sure knew where to go. But with the look he gave me then, my anger left me, and I wanted to cry. You are not nice, he said. Tu n'es pas chic de tout. Then he said no more, and we walked to the boulevard in silence. Behind us, I could hear the murmur of Jacques' voice. On the corner, we stood and waited for them to catch up with us. Darling, said Hella as she reached me, you stay and have a drink if you want to. I can't. I really can't. I don't feel well at all. She turned to Giovanni. Please forgive me, she said. But I've just come back from Spain, and I've hardly sat down a moment since I got off the train. Another time, truly. But I must get some sleep tonight. She smiled and held out her hand, but he did not seem to see it. I'll walk Hella home, I said, and then I'll come back, if you'll tell me where you're going to be. Giovanni laughed abruptly. Why, we will be in the quarter, he said. We will not be difficult to find. I am sorry, said Jacques to Hella, that you do not feel well. Perhaps another time. And Hella's hand, which was still uncertainly outstretched, he bowed over and kissed a second time. He straightened and looked at me. You must bring Hella to dinner at my house one night. He made a face. There is no need to hide your fiancée from us. No need whatever, said Giovanni. She is very charming, and we, with a grin to Hella, will try to be charming too. Well, I said, and took Hella by the arm. I'll see you later. If I am not here, said Giovanni, both vindictive and near tears, by the time you come back again, I will be at home. You remember where that is? It is near a zoo. I remember, I said. I started backing away as though I were backing out of a cage. I'll see you later. A tout à l'heure. À la prochaine, said Giovanni. I felt their eyes on our backs as we walked away from them. For a long while, Hella was silent, possibly because, like me, she was afraid to say anything. Then, I really can't stand that man. He gives me the creeps. After a moment, I didn't know you'd seen so much of him while I was away. I didn't, I said. To do something with my hands, to give myself a moment of privacy, I stopped and lit a cigarette. I felt her eyes, but she was not suspicious. She was only troubled. And who is Giovanni? She asked when we started walking again. She gave a little laugh. I just realized that I haven't even asked you where you were living. Are you living with him? We've been sharing a maid's room out at the end of Paris, I said. Then it wasn't very nice of you, said Hella, to go off for so long without any warning. Well, my God, I said, he's only my roommate. How was I to know he'd start dragging the river just because I stayed out a couple of nights? Jacques said you left him there without any money, without any cigarettes or anything, and you didn't even tell him you were going to be with me. There are lots of things I didn't tell Giovanni, but he's never made any kind of scene before. I guess he must be drunk. I'll talk to him later. Are you going to go back there later? Well, I said, if I don't go back there later, I'll go on over to the room. I've been meaning to do that anyway. I grinned. I have to get shaved. Hella sighed. I didn't mean to get your friends mad at you, she said. You ought to go back and have a drink with them. You said you were going to. Well, I may. I may not. I'm not married to them, you know. Well, the fact that you're going to be married to me doesn't mean you have to break your word to your friends. It doesn't even mean, she added shortly, that I have to like your friends. Hella, I said, I am perfectly aware of that. We turned off the boulevard toward her hotel. He's very intense, isn't he? She said. I was staring at the dark mound of the Senate, which ended our dark, slightly uphill street. Who is? Giovanni. He's certainly very fond of you. He's Italian, I said. Italians are theatrical. Well, this one, she laughed, must be special, even in Italy. How long have you been living with him? A couple of months. I threw away my cigarette. I ran out of money while you were away. You know, I'm still waiting for money. And I moved in with him because it was cheaper. At that time, he had a job and was living with his mistress most of the time. Oh? She said. He has a mistress? He had a mistress, I said. He also had a job. He's lost both. Poor boy, she said. No wonder he looks so lost. He'll be all right, I said, briefly. We were before her door. She pressed the night bell. Is he a very good friend of Jacques? She asked. Perhaps, I said. Not quite good enough to please Jacques. She laughed. I always feel a cold wind go over me, she said, when I find myself in the presence of a man who dislikes women as much as Jacques does. Well then, I said, we'll just keep him away from you. We don't want no cold winds blowing over this girl. I kissed her on the tip of her nose. At the same moment, there was a rumble from deep within the hotel, and the door unlocked itself with a small, violent shudder. Hella looked humorously into the blackness. I always wonder, she said, if I dare go in. Then she looked up at me. Well, do you want to have drink upstairs before you go back to join your friends? Sure, I said. We tiptoed into the hotel, closing the door gently behind us. My fingers finally found the minuturi, and the weak yellow light spilled over us. A voice completely unintelligible shouted out at us, and Hella shouted back her name, which she tried to pronounce with a French accent. As we started up the stairs, the light went out, and Hella and I began to giggle like two children. We were unable to find the minute switch on any of the landings. I don't know why we both found this so hilarious, but we did. And we held on to each other, giggling all the way to Hella's top floor room. Tell me about Giovanni, she asked, much later, while we lay in bed and watched the black night tease her stiff white curtains. He interests me. That's a pretty tactless thing to say at this moment, I told her. What the hell do you mean, he interests you? I mean who he is, what he thinks about, how he got that face. What's the matter with his face? Nothing. He's very beautiful, as a matter of fact. But there's something in that face, so old-fashioned. Go to sleep, I said. You're babbling. How did you meet him? Oh, in a bar, one drunken night, with lots of other people. Was Jacques there? I don't remember. Yes, I guess so. I guess he met Giovanni at the same time I did. What made you go to live with him? I told you, I was broke and he had this room. But that can't have been the only reason. Oh, well, I said. I liked him. And don't you like him anymore? I'm very fond of Giovanni. You didn't see him at his best tonight, but he's a very nice man. I laughed. Covered by the night, emboldened by Hella's body and my own, and protected by the tone of my voice, I found great relief in adding, I love him in a way. I really do. He seems to feel that you have a funny way of showing it. Oh, well, I said, these people have another style from us. They're much more demonstrative. I can't help it. I just can't do all that. Yes, she said thoughtfully. I've noticed that. You've noticed what? Kids here, they think nothing of showing a lot of affection for each other. It's sort of a shock at first. Then you begin to think it's sort of nice. It is sort of nice, I said. Well, said Hella, I think we ought to take Giovanni out to dinner or something one of these days. After all, he did sort of rescue you. That's a good idea, I said. I don't know what he's doing these days, but I imagine he'll have a free evening. Does he hang around with Jacques much? No, I don't think so. I think he just ran into Jacques tonight. I paused. I'm beginning to see, I said carefully, that kids like Giovanni are in a difficult position. This isn't, you know, the land of opportunity. There's no provision made for them. Giovanni's poor. I mean, he comes from poor folks. And there isn't really much that he can do. And for what he can do, there's terrific competition. And at that, very little money, not enough for them to be able to think of building any kind of future. That's why so many of them wander the streets and turn into gigolos and gangsters and God knows what. It's cold, she said, out here in the old world. Well, it's pretty cold out there in the new one, too, I said. It's cold out here, period. She laughed. But we have our love to keep us warm. We're not the first people who thought that as they lay in bed. Nevertheless, we lay silent and still in each other's arms for a while. Hella, I said at last. Yes? Hella, when the money gets here, let's take it and get out of Paris. Get out of Paris? Where do you want to go? I don't care. Just out. I'm sick of Paris. I'm going to leave it for a while. Let's go south. Maybe there'll be some sun. Shall we get married in the south? Hella, I said, you have to believe me. I can't do anything or decide anything. I can't even see straight until we get out of this town. I don't want to get married here. I don't even want to think about getting married here. Let's just get out. I didn't know you felt this way, she said. I've been living in Giovanni's room for months, I said, and I just can't stand it anymore. I have to get out of there. Please. She laughed nervously and moved slightly away from me. Well, I really don't see why getting out of Giovanni's room means getting out of Paris. I sighed. Please, Hella, I don't feel like going into long explanations now. Maybe it's just that if I stay in Paris, I'll keep running into Giovanni and... I stopped. Why should that disturb you? Well, I can't do anything to help him, and I can't stand having him watch me, as though... I'm an American, Hella. He thinks I'm rich. I paused and sat up, looking outward. She watched me. He's a very nice man, as I say, but he's very persistent, and he's got this thing about me. He thinks I'm God. And that room is so stinking and dirty. And soon winter will be here, and it's going to be cold. I turned to her again and took her in my arms. Look, let's just go. I'll explain a lot of things to you later. Later, when we get out. There was a long silence. And you want to leave right away? She said. Yes. As soon as that money comes, let's rent a house. You're sure, she said, that you don't just want to go back to the States? I groaned. No. Not yet. That isn't what I mean. She kissed me. I don't care where we go, she said, as long as we're together. Then she pushed me away. It's almost morning, she said. We'd better get some sleep. I got to Giovanni's room very late the next evening. I had been walking by the river with Hella, and later, I drank too much in several bistros. The light crashed on as I came into the room, and Giovanni sat up in bed, crying out in a voice of terror, Chi è là? Chi è là? I stopped in the doorway, weaving a little in the light, and I said, It's me, Giovanni. Shut up. Giovanni stared at me and turned on his side, facing the wall, and began to cry. I thought, sweet Jesus, and I carefully closed the door. I took my cigarettes out of my jacket pocket and hung my jacket over the chair. With my cigarettes in my hand, I went to the bed and leaned over Giovanni. I said, Baby, stop crying. Please, stop crying. Giovanni turned and looked at me. His eyes were red and wet, but he wore a strange smile. It was composed of cruelty and shame and delight. He held out his arms, and I leaned down, brushing his hair from his eyes. You smell of wine, said Giovanni then. I haven't been drinking wine. Is that what frightened you? Is that why you are crying? No. What is the matter? Why have you gone away from me? I did not know what to say. Giovanni turned to the wall again. I had hoped, I had supposed that I would feel nothing, but I felt a tightening in a far corner of my heart, as though a finger had touched me there. I have never reached you, said Giovanni. You have never really been there. I do not think you have ever lied to me, but I know that you have never told me the truth. Why? Sometimes you were here all day long and you read, or you opened the window, or you cooked something, and I watched you, and you never said anything. And you looked at me with such eyes as though you did not see me. All day while I worked to make this room for you. I said nothing. I looked beyond Giovanni's head at the square windows which held back the feeble moonlight. What are you doing all the time? And why do you say nothing? You are evil, you know? And sometimes when you smiled at me, I hated you. I wanted to strike you. I wanted to make you bleed. You smiled at me the way you smiled at everyone. You told me what you told everyone. And you tell nothing but lies. What are you always hiding? And do you think I did not know when you made love to me you were making love to no one? No one! Or everyone, but not me, certainly. I am nothing to you, nothing, and you bring me fever but no delight. I moved, looking for a cigarette. They were in my hand. I lit one. In a moment, I thought, I will say something. I will say something, and then I will walk out of this room forever.
You know I cannot be alone.
I have told you.
What is the matter? Can we never have a life together?
He began to cry again. I watched the hot tears roll from the corners of his eyes onto the dirty pillow.
If you cannot love me, I will die.
Before you came, I wanted to die. I have told you many times. It is cruel to have me want to live only to make my death more bloody.
I wanted to say so many things. Yet when I opened my mouth, I made no sound. And yet, I do not know what I felt for Giovanni. I felt nothing for Giovanni. I felt terror and pity and a rising lust.
He took my cigarette from my lips and puffed on it, sitting up in bed, his hair in his eyes again.
I have never known anyone like you before. I was never like this before you came.
Listen, in Italy, I had a woman, and she was very good to me. She loved me. She loved me. And she took care of me, and she was always there when I came in from work, in from the vineyards, and there was never any trouble between us. Never. I was young then, and did not know the things I learned later, or the terrible things you have taught me. I thought all women were like that. I thought all men were like me. I thought I was like all other men. I was not unhappy then, and I was not lonely, for she was there, and I did not want to die. I wanted to stay forever in our village and work in the vineyards and drink the wine we made and make love to my girl. I have told you about my village. It is very old, and in the south. It is on a hill. At night, when we walked by the wall, the world seemed to fall down before us, the whole far-off, dirty world. I did not ever want to see it. Once we made love under the wall. Yes, I wanted to stay there forever and eat much spaghetti and drink much wine and make many babies and grow fat. You would not have liked me if I had stayed. I can see you, many years from now, coming through our village in the ugly, fat American motor car you will surely have by then, and looking at me and looking at all of us and tasting our wine and shitting on us with those empty smiles Americans wear everywhere, and which you wear all the time, and driving off with a great roar of the motors and a great sound of tires and telling all the other Americans you meet that they must come and see our village because it is so picturesque. And you will have no idea of the life there. Dripping and bursting and beautiful and terrible as you have no idea of my life now. But I think I would have been happier there, and I would not have minded your smiles. I would have had my life. I have lain here many nights, waiting for you to come home, and thought how far away is my village and how terrible it is to be in this cold city among people whom I hate, where it is cold and wet and never dry and hot as it was there, and where Giovanni has no one to talk to and no one to be with, and where he has found a lover who is neither man nor woman, nothing that I can know or touch. You do not know, do you, what it is like to lie awake at night and wait for someone to come home? But I am sure you do not know. You do not know anything. You do not know any of the terrible things. That is why you smile and dance the way you do, and you think that the comedy you were playing with a short-haired, moon-faced little girl is love. He dropped the cigarette to the floor, where it lay burning faintly. He began to cry again. I looked at the room, thinking, I cannot bear it. I left my village one wild, sweet day. I will never forget that day. It was the day of my death. I wish it had been the day of my death.
I remember the sun was hot and scratchy on the back of my neck as I walked the road away from my village, and the road went upward, and I walked bent over. I remember everything, the brown dust at my feet, and the little pebbles which rushed before me, and the short trees along the road, and all the flat houses, and all their colors under the sun. I remember I was weeping, but not as I am weeping now. Much worse, more terrible. Since I am with you, I cannot even cry as I cried then. That was the first time in my life that I wanted to die. I had just buried my baby in the churchyard where my father and my father's fathers were, and I had left my girl screaming in my mother's house. Yes, I had made a baby, but it was born dead. It was all gray and twisted when I saw it, and it made no sound. And we spanked it on the buttocks, and we sprinkled it with holy water, and we prayed, but it never made a sound. It was dead. It was a little boy. It would have been a wonderful, strong man, perhaps even the kind of man you and Jacques and Guillaume and all your disgusting band of fairies spend all your days and nights looking for and dreaming of. But it was dead. It was my baby, and we had made it, my girl and I, and it was dead. When I knew that it was dead, I took our crucifix off the wall, and I spat on it, and I threw it on the floor, and my mother and my girl screamed, and I went out. We buried it right away the next day, and then I left my village, and I came to this city where surely God has punished me for all my sins and for spitting on his holy son, and where I will surely die. I do not think that I will ever see my village again. I stood up. My head was turning. Salt was in my mouth. The room seemed to rock, as it had the first time I had come here so many lifetimes ago. I heard Giovanni's moan behind me. Chérie, mon très cher, don't leave me. Please don't leave me. I turned and held him in my arms, staring above his head at the wall, at the man and woman on the wall who walked together among roses. He was sobbing, it would have been said, as though his heart would break. But I felt that it was my heart which was broken. Something had broken in me to make me so cold and so perfectly still and far away. Still, I had to speak. Giovanni, I said. Giovanni. He began to be still. He was listening. I felt unwillingly, not for the first time, the cunning of the desperate. Giovanni, I said, you always knew that I would leave one day. You knew my fiancée was coming back to Paris. You are not leaving me for her, he said. You are leaving me for some other reason. You lie so much, you have come to believe all your own lies. But I have senses. You are not leaving me for a woman. If you were really in love with this little girl, you would not have had to be so cruel to me. She's not a little girl, I said. She's a woman, and no matter what you think, I do love her. You do not, cried Giovanni, sitting up. Love anyone. You never have loved anyone. I am sure you never will. You love your purity. You love your mirror. You are just like a little virgin. You walk around with your hands in front of you as though you had some precious metal, gold, silver, rubies, maybe diamonds down there between your legs. You will never give it to anybody. You will never let anybody touch it, man or woman. You want to be clean. You think you came here covered with soap, and you think you will go out covered with soap, and you do not want to stink, not even for 5 minutes in the meantime.
He grasped me by the collar, wrestling and caressing at once, fluid and iron at once, saliva spraying from his lips and his eyes full of tears, but with the bones of his face showing and the muscles leaping in his arms and neck.
You want to leave Giovanni because he makes you stink. You want to despise Giovanni because he is not afraid of the stink of love. You want to kill him in the name of all your lying little moralities, and you are immoral. You are by far the most immoral man I have met in all my life. Look, look what you have done to me. Do you think you could have done this if I did not love you? Is this what you should do to love? Giovanni, stop it. For God's sake, stop it. What in the world do you want me to do? I can't help the way I feel. Do you know how you feel? Do you feel? What do you feel? I feel nothing now, I said. Nothing. I want to get out of this room. I want to get away from you. I want to end this terrible scene. You want to get away from me? He laughed. He watched me. The look in his eyes was so bottomlessly bitter, it was almost benevolent. At last, you're beginning to be honest. And do you know why you want to get away from me? Inside me, something locked. I cannot have a life with you, I said. But you can have a life with Hella, with that moon-faced little girl who thinks babies come out of cabbages, or Frigidaires. I am not acquainted with the mythology of your country. You can have a life with her.
Yes, I said wearily. I can have a life with her. I stood up. I was shaking.
What kind of life can we have in this room? This filthy little room? What kind of life can two men have together anyway? All this love you talk about, isn't it just that you want to be made to feel strong? You want to go out and be the big laborer and bring home the money, and you want me to stay here and wash the dishes and cook the food and clean this miserable closet of a room and kiss you when you come in through that door and lie with you at night and be your little girl? That's what you want. That's what you mean, and that's all you mean when you say you love me. You say I want to kill you? What do you think you've been doing to me?
I am not trying to make you a little girl. If I wanted a little girl, I would be with a little girl.
Why aren't you? Isn't it just that you're afraid? And you take me because you haven't got the guts to go after a woman, which is what you really want?
He was pale.
You are the one who keeps talking about what I want. But I have only been talking about who I want.
But I'm a man, I cried. A man! What do you think can happen between us?
You know very well, said Giovanni slowly, what can happen between us. It is for that reason you are leaving me. He got up and walked to the window and opened it. Bon, he said. He struck his fist once against the windowsill.
If I could make you stay, I would, he shouted. If I had to beat you, chain you, starve you, if I could make you stay, I would.
He turned back into the room. The wind blew his hair. He shook his finger at me, grotesquely playful.
One day, perhaps, you will wish I had.
It's cold, I said. Close the window. He smiled. Now that you are leaving, you want the windows closed,
Bien sûr. He closed the window, and we stood staring at each other in the center of the room. We will not fight anymore, he said. Fighting will not make you stay. In French, we have what is called en séparation des corps. Not a divorce, you understand, just a separation. Well, we will separate. But I know you belong with me. I believe, I must believe, that you will come back. Giovanni, I said, I'll not be coming back. You know I won't be back. He waved his hand. I said we would not fight anymore. The Americans have no sense of doom, none whatever. They do not recognize doom when they see it. He produced a bottle from beneath the sink. Jacques left a bottle of cognac here. Let us have a little drink. For the road, as I believe you people say sometimes. I watched him. He carefully poured two drinks. I saw that he was shaking, with rage, or pain, or both. He handed me my glass. Allez, tiens, he said. Allez, tiens. We drank. I could not keep myself from asking, Giovanni, what are you going to do now? Oh, he said, I have friends. I will think of things to do. Tonight, for example, I shall have supper with Jacques. No doubt tomorrow night I shall also have supper with Jacques. He has become very fond of me. He thinks you are a monster. Giovanni, I said helplessly, be careful. Please be careful. He gave me an ironical smile. Thank you, he said. You should have given me that advice the night we met. That was the last time we really spoke to one another. I stayed with him until morning, and then I threw my things into a bag and took them away with me to Hella's place. I will not forget the last time he looked at me. The morning light filled the room, reminding me of so many mornings, and of the morning I had first come there. Giovanni sat on the bed, completely naked, holding a glass of cognac between his hands. His body was dead white. His face was wet and gray. I was at the door with my suitcase. With my hand on the knob, I looked at him. Then I wanted to beg him to forgive me. But this would have been too great a confession. Any yielding at that moment would have locked me forever in that room with him. And in a way, this was exactly what I wanted. I felt a tremor go through me, like the beginning of an earthquake. And felt for an instant that I was drowning in his eyes. His body, which I had come to know so well, glowed in the light and charged and thickened the air between us. Then something opened in my brain, a secret, noiseless door swung open, frightening me. It had not occurred to me until that instant that, in fleeing from his body, I confirmed and perpetuated his body's power over me. Now, as though I had been branded, his body was burned into my mind, into my dreams. And all this time he did not take his eyes from me. He seemed to find my face more transparent than a shop window. He did not smile. He was neither grave, nor vindictive, nor sad. He was still. He was waiting, I think, for me to cross that space and take him in my arms again. Waiting,
as one waits at a deathbed for the miracle one dare not disbelieve, which will not happen. I had to get out of there, for my face showed too much. The war in my body was dragging me down. My feet refused to carry me over to him again. The wind of my life was blowing me away. Au revoir, Giovanni. Au revoir, mon cher. I turned from him, unlocked the door. The weary exhale of his breath seemed to ruffle my hair and brush my brow like the very wind of madness. I walked down the short corridor, expecting every instant to hear his voice behind me, passed through the vestibule, past the loge of the still-sleeping concierge, into the morning streets, and with every step I took, it became more impossible for me to turn back. And my mind was empty, or it was as though my mind had become one enormous, anesthetized wound. I thought only, one day I'll weep for this. One of these days, I'll start to cry. At the corner, in a faint patch of the morning sun, I looked in my wallet to count my bus tickets. In the wallet, I found 300 francs, taken from Hella, my carte d'identité, my address in the United States, and paper, scraps of paper, cards, photographs. On each piece of paper, I found addresses, telephone numbers, memos of various rendezvous made and kept, or perhaps not kept, people met and remembered, or perhaps not remembered, hopes probably not fulfilled, certainly not fulfilled, or I would not have been standing on that street corner. I found 4 bus tickets in my wallet, and I walked to the arrêt. There was a policeman standing there, his blue hood, weighted, hanging down behind, his white club gleaming. He looked at me and smiled and cried, "Ça va?"
"Oui, merci."
"And you?"
"Toujours."
"It's a nice day, no?" "Yes." But my voice trembled. "The autumn is beginning."
"C'est ça."
And he turned away, back to his contemplation of the boulevard. I smoothed my hair with my hand, feeling foolish for feeling shaken. I watched a woman pass, coming from the market, her string bag full. At the top, precariously, a liter of red wine. She was not young, but she was clear-faced and bold. She had a strong, thick body and strong, thick hands. The policeman shouted something to her, and she shouted back, something bawdy and good-natured. The policeman laughed, but refused to look at me again. I watched the woman continue down the street. Home, I thought, to her husband, dressed in blue working clothes, dirty, and to her children. She passed the corner where the patch of sunlight fell and crossed the street. The bus came, and the policeman and I, the only people waiting, got on. He stood on the platform, far from me. The policeman was not young either, but he had a gusto which I admired. I looked out of the window and the streets rolled by. Ages ago, in another city, on another bus, I sat so at the windows, looking outward, inventing for each flying face which trapped my brief attention some life, some destiny, in which I played a part. I was looking for some whisper or promise of my possible salvation. But it seemed to me that morning that my ancient self had been dreaming the most dangerous dream of all. The days that followed seemed to fly, seemed to turn cold overnight. The tourists and their thousands disappeared, conjured away by timetables. When one walked through the gardens, leaves fell about one's head and sighed and crashed beneath one's feet. The stone of the city, which had been luminous and changing, faded slowly, but with no hesitation, into simple gray stone again. It was apparent that the stone was hard. Daily, fishermen disappeared from the river until, one day, the riverbanks were clear. The bodies of young boys and girls began to be compromised by heavy underwear, by sweaters and mufflers, hoods and capes. Old men seemed older, old women slower. The colors on the river faded. The rain began, and the river began to rise. It was apparent that the sun would soon give up the tremendous struggle it cost her to get to Paris for a few hours every day. "But it will be warm in the south," I said. The money had come. Hella and I were busy every day, on the track of a house in Aix, in Cagnes-sur-Mer, in Vannes, in Monte Carlo, in Antibes, in Grasse. We were scarcely ever seen in the quarter. We stayed in her room. We made love a lot. We went to the movies and had long, frequently rather melancholy dinners in strange restaurants on the right bank. It is hard to say what produced this melancholy, which sometimes settled over us like the shadow of some vast, some predatory waiting bird. I do not think that Hella was unhappy, for I had never before clung to her as I clung to her during that time. But perhaps she sensed, from time to time, that my clutch was too insistent to be trusted, certainly too insistent to last. And from time to time, around the quarter, I ran into Giovanni. I dreaded seeing him, not only because he was almost always with Jacques, but also because, though he was often rather better dressed, he did not look well. I could not endure something at once abject and vicious which I began to see in his eyes, nor the way he giggled at Jacques' jokes, nor the mannerisms, a fairy's mannerisms, which he was beginning sometimes to affect. I did not want to know what his status was with Jacques. Yet the day came when it was revealed to me in Jacques' spiteful and triumphant eyes. And Giovanni, during this short encounter, in the middle of the boulevard as dusk fell, with people hurrying all about us, was really amazingly giddy and girlish, and very drunk. It was as though he were forcing me to taste the cup of his humiliation, and I hated him for this. The next time I saw him, it was in the morning. He was buying a newspaper. He looked up at me insolently, into my eyes, and looked away. I watched him diminish down the boulevard. When I got home, I told Hella about it, trying to laugh. Then I began to see him around the quarter without Jacques, with the street boys of the quarter, whom he had once described to me as lamentable. He was no longer so well dressed. He was beginning to look like one of them. His special friend among them seemed to be the same tall, pockmarked boy named Eve, whom I remembered having seen briefly, playing the pinball machine, and later talking to Jacques on that first morning in Les Halles. One night, quite drunk myself, and wandering about the quarter alone, I ran into this boy and bought him a drink. I did not mention Giovanni, but Eve volunteered the information that he was not with Jacques anymore. But it seemed that he might be able to get back his old job in Guillaume's bar. It was certainly not more than a week after this that Guillaume was found dead in the private quarters above his bar, strangled with the sash of his dressing gown. 5. It was a terrific scandal. If you were in Paris at the time, you certainly heard of it, and saw the picture printed in all the newspapers of Giovanni just after he was captured. Editorials were written, and speeches were made, and many bars of the genre of Guillaume's bar were closed. But they did not stay closed long. Plainclothes policemen descended on the quarter, asking to see everyone's papers, and the bars were emptied of tapettes. Giovanni was nowhere to be found. All of the evidence, above all, of course, his disappearance, pointed to him as the murderer. Such a scandal always threatens, before its reverberations cease, to rock the very foundations of the state. It is necessary to find an explanation, a solution, and a victim with the utmost possible speed. Most of the men picked up in connection with this crime were not picked up on suspicion of murder. They were picked up on suspicion of having what the French, with a delicacy I take to be sardonic, call les goûts particuliers. These tastes, which do not constitute a crime in France, are nevertheless regarded with extreme disapprobation by the bulk of the populace, which also looks on its rulers and betters with a stony lack of affection. When Guillaume's corpse was discovered, it was not only the boys of the street who were frightened. They, in fact, were a good deal less frightened than the men who roamed the streets to buy them, whose careers, positions, aspirations could never have survived such no